Get back to baseball in just a moment, which is something we rarely say around here, but the All-Star game really delivered last night. It went to not extra innings when the American League tied it up after being down 6-0, Pearl. It went to a home run derby. Three swings, three different guys, and it was thrilling. Your guy, Kyle Schwarber, ends up becoming the hero. He's your All-Star MVP because he had a hat trick. 3-for-3 on home run derby swings. He won the game.
Yeah, I mean, this is how they have to determine everything from now on. If I don't get a home run derby at the end of a game, then what are we doing?
How about everything in life? Just now, we all go to home run derby, decide the president that way, everything.
Is it way too radical to think about maybe having the home run derby after a certain number of innings and extra innings? Is it way in the regular season, like a soccer shootout? Is that just too far? Because baseball's been going pretty far with their rule changes.
I mean, I never thought you'd see, and I could have never conceived, that you would start extra innings with a runner on second.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty radical at the time. It was to save arms. I don't know. I'm not ready for that yet. I realize Rob Manfred's in like ludicrous speed with all these changes to baseball, and for the most part, he's had the Midas touch. They've been good, but that seems a bridge too far.
Where are we with the golden at bat? That's the real question.
Now, there we go.
That's pretty radical, too.
Do you want to explain what that idea?
The golden at bat is a rule that once a game, the manager can go outside of his lineup and put his best hitter anywhere. Even if he just batted two batters before, they can insert him, right? That's basically the rule. You could do it once. Now, if they could do that, and they haven't done it yet, he floated it.
Yep.
Then they could definitely, if you go to the 12th inning, instead of pitching more, why don't you just do a home run derby? Saves wear and tear on the players, and the game doesn't go that late.
It's funny. I do love like penalty kicks in soccer, and I feel like that's why the purists don't love how games are decided by PKs. I know Manny's shaking his head. They don't like it.
I like it. They don't, though.
Right. It's exciting, but I don't know. That seems like a bridge too far. The golden at bat, I like. Now, you know, we've had some out-of-nowhere postseason heroes like a David Freese or someone like that who's got these all-time great moments. But, I mean, would any right manager in the right Ryan put Big Poppy there or someone else?
I mean, listen,
definitely.
Remember at Wimbledon, they used to not – was it the last set? They wouldn't have – actually, I think they used to not have tiebreakers.
They used to not, yeah.
I remember, didn't John Isner go 50 to 48?
John Isner against Nicolas Mahut, yeah. The longest.
50 to 48 or something?
Yeah, the match lasted like 2.5 days.
So there was a point where a tiebreaker probably seemed radical for tennis, and now they have that. That's part of the game. So maybe baseball will have a home run derby. I don't think it's out of question at all.
Poll question, EJ. Where there'll come a day – where home run derbies are deciding regular season games or postseason?
I was thinking regular season. Postseason, I feel like World Series, you got to play it out.
I would hope so.
But can you imagine that? Oh my God. Game 7, Dodgers Yankees, Shohei versus Judge.
I just remembered the NHL overtime, they do 3-on-3 hockey. And then when it comes to the postseason, it's, you know, back to 5-on-5, you know, 20 minute periods.
Yeah. Same with baseball. There's no runner on second and extra innings when it's the postseason. They don't do that, right? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
The postseason.
No, postseason, they get rid of it.
It's kind of hard to keep track of baseball's rules out there.
Honestly, Manfred, you wild man.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's kind of fun. Would you like to see a home run derby deciding games in the regular season, not just for an exhibition? In the meantime, Arch Manning yesterday, Pearl, at SEC Media Days, and it really feels like it's kind of, despite all the other good quarterbacks in this upcoming college football season, Arch is kind of in a lane all of his own. And first, let's play a little bit of sound. So let's go to Arch. Says he's not worried about the Heisman hype, and he knows he has a lot to prove.
I'm not really in the business of this is going to sound mean, but like caring what other people think. But, you know, I'm grateful that y'all think that. But I've only played, two games, so I got a lot to prove. But, I'm ready to play, though.
I kind of like that. You know, at the end there, he's telling you, I'm ready for this. I understand I'm getting too much too soon. The hype is definitely, you know, out of control probably, and it's only going to get crazier. But he says he's ready to play. And then here's his head coach, Steve Sarkisian, saying Texas is not just going to be the Arch Manning show.
It's not going to be all about Arch Manning. Do I want him to play well? Do I want him to do his job well? Yes, but for us to be as successful as we can be, to try to become champions, we need to play well as a team, and it's not just going to be all about him.
Arch Manning.
To that, I say good luck with all that.
Oh, come on. That's a coach. That's good coach speak, and it's true. Texas is kind of stacked. So it can't all be about Arch, right? They got to run the ball, and their defense could be killer. Like, that Sark, that I actually agree with Sark. Like, it can't, if it's the Arch show, that's probably not a good sign for Texas, right?
No, I think it means he's playing so well that they trust him and that he's going to have some major wow plays and stuff like that. I'm not seeing it as a negative. I think that you're kind of kidding yourself if you think that he's going to be minimized at all. Because you know what we do, Pearl. We always give quarterbacks too much credit and too much blame. And I'm not saying we're right, the outside, not just the media, but the fans as well. I'm not saying we're right. I'm just saying that's how it goes. So to try to swim against stream there, I think is, you know, it's fine to say at a media day, but it's not actually how it's going to go.
No, I actually disagree. I think that you think of what's the greatest one-man college football team of all time. It's Vince Young at Texas. Arch Manning cannot be like that. Like, he's got to be, they got to really run the ball well to protect him. Like,
he can run.
No, I'm just saying, like, they need to put him in good run and big games. They need to put him in good positions. I think actually Sark's right. Like, that overall team is really good. They're not relying on Arch to carry them. Like, I don't think he has to be a one-man gang at all there.
Well, they have talent, but you're not going to avoid the spotlight is what I'm saying.
Right.
So even, and we talked about this with Brett McMurphy yesterday. He throws three touchdowns and one interception. Are we going to be more focused on the three touchdowns or the one interception? Now, that would be unfair. But to say that he's not going to be the headline coming out of all these Texas games, I think is being naive, no?
Really? I think that the Texas could have games where their pass rush just destroys everybody and then they run like crazy. And Sark obviously is famous because at Alabama he had all the wide receivers wide open down the field.
Yep.
But I think he wants to run the ball. I don't think it's going to be the Arch show totally. Maybe I'm being naive. You're right. The hype will go to Arch, but the reality, if they want to win a title, they have to be a more well-rounded team. Like, I don't think Arch has, I'll tell you right now, I would not put a dime on him to win the Heisman. I don't think he's going to have that kind of numbers, like Bryce Young, Joe Burrow numbers.
Well, let's see. Now,
I mean, I think like Garrett Nussmeier has a great chance at. Like, I think Sark's being legit. Like, this is more of a team effort.
Yeah, but the Heisman isn't always about the numbers, or else Travis Hunter wouldn't have won. I mean, Travis was so unique and playing both ways, but you recognize something really special when it was happening. You know, one other question about this the Arch Manning era, if you will. He started two games in the past. He came in a couple special packages and stuff, but this is really now him taking over the squad. Let's say things don't go as people expect. And by that, I mean Texas not making the college football playoff. It's a 12-team playoff.
Okay, okay.
They made it the last 2 years with Sark and Quinn Ewers. If they don't make the playoff and something does happen, because weird stuff happens in college football, and he's healthy, who's going to take more of the blame here? Is it going to be Steve Sarkisian, or is it going to be Arch Manning? I have my answer. I don't know if you have yours.
I think I probably agree with you. Sark would be in trouble if they didn't make the playoffs.
I think he's got to win a title, too, with Arch. I think people are going to wonder, they wonder with Brian Kelly, like, how did you not do better with Jaden Daniels? You know, I think you're going to start getting those kind of questions. And the fact that you have been to the playoff before, it's going to feel like a squandered opportunity if Arch looks good and they don't win.
Well, I mean, I think that... one thing about Sark, if he has a great season statistically, people will look at him as a quarterback whisperer, and those guys are always in demand.
That's
true. Like Ryan Day and Lincoln Riley. So,
but Ryan Day was through it until they went on a magical run last year.
Yeah, I mean, but I think Lincoln Riley, I know, has not had team success, but I still think people are attracted to him because he can... attracted to him.
Yeah.
Because he can make your quarterback look awesome. I think Sark has his sort of... reputation as an offensive genius. So if Arch has a big year and they don't win some games, I mean, I would think that Sark would still have a lot of power because the offense is so good. And he's been recruiting like crazy too. So I think Sark is in a safe spot. But let's see, Texas, how do they not? I don't see them not making the playoff. How is this going to happen?
Well, okay, they start off the season with a bang. They're at Ohio State to get things going, and I think that the pressure is clearly going to be on Arch, but on Sark Moore. He's the one who's supposed to be like guiding Arch. You know, like he's the one who has the experience, who's been coaching deep into these postseasons. I just think Sark wears it all. I don't think people are ready to turn on Arch Manning or doubt him or any of that stuff. I think they like him. They want him to. We want to see him be good like his uncles, and we want to see the Manning name like continue on.
He'll be fine. There's no way this offense isn't going to work. I mean, he made Mac Jones look like Joe Namath. I mean, like, it's going to be fine. I'm not worried about the offense. So they do have Ohio State, but then they have San Jose State, UTEP, Sam Houston for their out of schedule. You know, yeah. they're going to rack up some wins at Florida, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt. I mean, yeah. they have no excuse there. To lose any of those games.
Right. And if something happens, and if they do, we never thought Alabama was going to lose to Vanderbilt. You got Diego Pavias walking around a tuxedo at SEC Media Days.
Can I make a case, though, for why I think it actually is Arch Manning, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'm a guy who always thinks history repeats itself. And I did watch the great Heisman race of 1997.
Yep.
And Peyton if I remember Manning. Peyton I Manning's college career, I don't remember seeing a lot of clips being like, oh, this Phil Fulmer, like, this he screwed this up. I remember it being Peyton Manning can't win the big one. He can't beat Florida. What's wrong with this guy? It doesn't mean that he couldn't be the number one pick. He still was. But I think just in terms of pressure, in terms of who wore Tennessee's failures, in terms of not winning a national championship, I think it was definitely on Peyton Manning. Now, to be fair, Phil Fulmer won the next year, so maybe had he kept losing, maybe Phil Fulmer would have gained this, like, you know, identity as a choker. But I felt like at the moment, they put it on the quarterback.
Yeah, so I think a lot of things have happened since then that actually, in some ways, help Arch and hurt Sark, which is then Peyton went on to have this 5 MVP career, and Eli went on to win 2 Super Bowls, and Peyton won 2. And I think they became also even way more famous even than Archie ever was. And I wasn't around like to see what kind of maybe star Archie Manning was, but Peyton in every commercial, they got the TV show, First Family of Football, hosting SNL. Like, the Mannings are likable people, and I think that, to most, they are very likable, and I think that helps Arch. Am I being weird? Is that it? No, it makes sense?
But I think a big difference, though, is Peyton had a great year his junior year, and, like, there was a lot. He wore the crown because of what he had done on the field. Arch hasn't done anything yet. So Peyton had these big expectations coming into his senior year because he came back, and it was like, I feel like at least he had a body of success. Arch hasn't done anything. So are we really putting that? I guess we are.
Yeah, but he's a Heisman favorite. I mean, doesn't that suggest, though, that we're putting on those same expectations, even if it's unfair, which I agree it is unfair.
Totally unfair.
But I don't think Peyton had to win. Like, everyone thought that Tennessee team was going to win it all. So I think it's a little different. I mean, Arch, also the other thing, too, if you watch the visual of him, he's a kid. Did anyone notice that? It's like, God, this looks like a sophomore is about to rush his frat. Like, he does not. he's got a little bit of that Eli little kid face. So I don't know. I'm having trouble putting all this. And the way he talks to, he's like, I don't care what you think about me. I just can't put all this expectation on him. And I think if they go 10-2, make the playoffs, and I don't think he has to win a title. That's my point. He's got another year, too, so that'll just build into next year.
I know, but then the hype gets even bigger and bigger and bigger. But, you know, to be honest, he seems very comfortable in his own skin. He's obviously been in the spotlight since he was, you know, a child. Here is some more light questions that Arch Manning was asked yesterday about which family members give him the best advice for certain topics.
Music? Probably my brother. Is that even an option? Can I say him? Dances? I would say my dad. Dating advice? I'd say Eli. I think he's had a lot of dates in his life. He'd probably have some good advice. I'd say Peyton, for sure. Fashion? I'd go Eli. Cooking? None of them are very good cooks. Probably my grandmother. Best show to watch? I would say Peyton.
The hell did he say?
Okay, two things there. Not only would he go to Uncle Eli for dating advice, which I think is a little against type.
Well, Eli was single in New York for a while, though, right? I seem to remember that.
I don't know. And then secondly, Eli for fashion advice? Did someone check Arch's vision?
I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, Peyton looks crazy sometimes. No, I would never dress like Peyton Manning.
Oh, wow.
I think you got to go granddad.
Eli is Joe Burrow compared to Peyton Manning.
Yes, agreed. Totally agree, bro. Peyton.
Dating advice, I'd say Eli was had a lot of dates in his life.
I got to do some research. I think Eli, remember when Sam Darnold got mono from kissing every girl in New York? Yes. I think Eli had some fun in Hoboken, as I recall.
Interesting.
Hoboken, you don't have to dress well. Like, they're in
outside of New York and New Jersey.
Yeah. Where Eli famously, I think he still has a house there.
But like Eli Manning, ladies' man, not something that just rolls off the tongue.
Wow. Looks like a derp.
Yeah, Eli Manning, because he didn't get married. He didn't get engaged to his fiance until 2007.
Yeah.
So that was 3 years where he was not engaged in New York.
Yeah, but Arch would have been like 4 years old during that time.
Maybe he heard some war stories.
I guess he's got the pelts on the wall.
From Crazy Nights and Sea Caucus.
Those, you know, usually you end up dead. Sorry.
One thing about Arch is Cooper's son, right? Cooper is, talking about layback, Cooper doesn't have a fear in the world. He is one of the most like unique personalities. You see him in the commercials. Like, he is so cool, so confident, so loose. I think like Arch is his kid. You can see it. Those interviews sound like Cooper's does spots on Fox where he's really funny. Like, he's got Cooper written all over him, who's like the big personality of the family.
Yeah, and on a football side, he said, you know, his dad's career was cut short because of injury, so it taught him to appreciate all these moments and not take anything for granted, even doing things like media days and stuff like that. He knows it's not ever promised.
So let me ask you this. Do you think... judging his personality, do you think he'll feel the pressure? Or like, do you think if things start to go wrong, like this will really become a disaster? I think he's, in a way, above it. I know that sounds naive, but I don't think they lose a tough game. I don't think he's going to panic.
No, he might be uniquely set up for this. Like, his last name is giving him all this attention, but it's always given him all this attention. So maybe it's just another day. Did you, but college football fans can be brutal. He says he's not on social media, and I would suggest staying off social media if I were him, just because look at how it affects guys even like Kevin Durant. I mean, you get nuts when you start getting that kind of criticism online. But he said that it's so weird for him to be like the attention that he gets being in Austin and on campus and stuff can be so off-putting that his go-to move is to do a phone call to his mom. So he's like on the phone so people feel like they can't stop him to ask for photos. That's the famous person move, just on the phone.
Oh. I have bad news.
What?
Eli met his wife in college, so I was wrong.
Oh.
There's no single Eli. I don't know what he's talking about.
Well,
maybe they reconnected later. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I could see him maybe, I'm in the NFL. I'm going to, take a break. And they get it together. That's a story all the time.
Or he has some crazy stories about being the guy at an SEC school.
Well, that's Ole Miss is famous. The Grove for the co-eds.
Oh, is that right? The Grove?
Yeah, doesn't I saw yesterday. Well, who was it? Lane Kiffin posted a girl in a bikini doing some like whitewater fishing.
Nice.
In Mississippi. He's like, hashtag come to the sip. I'm like, this is how you're recruiting people at Ole Miss. Like, I mean, I guess it works.
It's so funny. Lane Kiffin almost he can do anything. People are just like, Lane.
God, he is so funny.
Hand wave. You crazy guy.
He is
Kirby
owning
Smart
that podium.
Can't do that.
No, because Kirby Smart is not funny at the podium. Kirby Smart's the opposite. Like,
that usually gets coaches in big trouble.
Can you imagine Brian Kelly trying to do that?
No.
It would go
he
badly.
He tries, though. He tries, and it always is cringe.
What? Like, I'm here with my family.
Him trying to dance with like the recruits during the visits. It's just like, dude, come on, man. Have some shame.
What was more unbelievable or more shocking or surprising? Eli Manning, ladies' man, Eli Manning, best dressed Manning.
Yep.
More surprising?
Put out the poll. That's according to Arch, his nephew Arch.
I kind of see both. That's why I don't find either of them that surprising. Among that crew, I'd agree.
The king
with
of the quarter zip?
I gotta be honest. I was at a Sports Illustrated Sportsman event. You were probably there, Maggie, probably working. And Eli walked up to the bar, and as the children say, he's got Riz. Mm. Like, he owned that bar.
Is
I
that
couldn't
right?
believe it. I'm like, Eli's a player? And we were all just like, and then he started like giving crap to everybody. Like, he's got a dark sense of humor. I'm telling you, Eli is not who you think he is.
That sounds ominous.
Yeah, I know. He's the man, I think. I think that's what we've discovered.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. So two things there for you. One, if things go sideways at Texas, who's going to get more of the blame, Steve Sarkisian or Arch Manning? And secondly, are you more shocked that Eli Manning is a ladies' man or
he's
that he's
a player,
the best dressed Manning? I guess the bar's low. 888-710-4ISN.
Wow.
Okay, coming up, we did get some unfiltered Lane Kiffin, so let's hear it. We'll do that next.
Dating advice? Let's say Eli. I think he's had a lot of dates in his life.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. I think there's a tendency to watch sports stars and get jealous, Maggie. I think we have the antidote for that. And his name? Scottie Scheffler.
I think a lot of people wish they could play golf like Scottie Scheffler. And
well, you think that until you hear the man talk, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess it's not that great to be a multimillionaire sports star.
Yeah, so this is a guy who's already won 5 majors, okay? Like, Scottie is, you know, the reigning PGA championship. Yeah. Like, we got the British Open, the Open Championships coming up this weekend, and Scottie Scheffler's kind of bringing the room down. Let's hear a little of Scottie saying that the feeling of winning tournaments, pretty empty.
It feels like you work your whole life to celebrate winning a tournament for like a few minutes. It only lasts a few minutes, that kind of euphoric feeling. And I like to win the Byron Nelson Championship at home. I literally worked my entire life to become good at golf, to have an opportunity to win that tournament. And you win it. You celebrate, get to hug my family, my sister's there. It's such an amazing moment. And then it's like, okay, now what are we going to eat for dinner?
Okay, man. More from Scottie. Says, winning tournaments are nice accomplishments, but they're not life-fulfilling.
It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of, like, the deepest, you know, places of your heart. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life, and then you get there and all of a sudden you get to number one in the world, and then they're like, what's the point? And you know, I really do believe that, because you know, what is the point? You're like, why do I want to win this tournament so bad? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis.
Okay, there's more. Says golf doesn't really satisfy him in a lot of ways.
I love the challenge. I love being able to play this game for a living. It's one of the greatest joys of my life, but does it fill the deepest, you know, wants and desires of my heart? Absolutely not.
Okay, so really candid there, yeah. From Scottie Scheffler. Perloff, is this the healthiest way to look at things or the most unhealthy way to look at things if you're Scottie Scheffler?
I mean, I think it's a reality. I don't know if it's healthy or unhealthy. I mean, I've experienced that in my life. Things that I really thought I wanted did not satisfy me the way I thought they would. That's a very normal human psychology, right? You work, you get something, boom, you have it, and then the crash comes. It's a cycle where you know, of excitement and depression, and like, not depression, but that's very human, what he's saying, don't you think?
I think part of this is relatable, but the thing about Scottie is that there's still so much more to achieve, right? Like, you're in the heart of your professional career. Sure, you can have a dip, but to say, like, you know, he kind of feels like he's resigned here, that golf is never going to be a fulfilling thing for him, which is a weird thing to say when you're a professional golfer, no?
He's saying family and his faith are what is really fulfilling. I'm sure that's what's it. We right. missed the second part, because he's very serious about religion.
Sure.
That, yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, look, Tiger wasn't fulfilled by all those majors. Obviously, he had a massive hole in his life and totally threw his life away.
Yeah. I think that was more like an addiction that he had, though, on the side.
But
like,
I just think I think it's true for any athlete. Like, they think winning a championship is going to mean happiness for life, and that is not how it works.
There's always a next tournament, a next season, until you retire.
Right. But I think the chase is also fulfilling. Like, he's talking about the it seems like that high of the euphoria, then the crash down of like, okay, what's next? But he's all like, you still have the chase. You haven't broken Jack Nicklaus's record, or there is so much more.
Well, yeah, but once you've won one Masters, I mean, you're kind of at the top of the mountain. Yesterday, we had Brett McMurphy on from On3 talking college football. He said that Nick Saban would win the title, be there at 7:30 the next morning saying, we're already behind on the recruiting trail. Let's work the phone. I think it's a very natural feeling for elite athletes to not be satisfied, and kind of that would feel, I get it, feeling empty. You work your whole life and then, like, this is it.
But then there's folks, we talked about Kobe Bryant yesterday. There are folks who, it's like losing is misery. And when they win, they don't want to just win. They want to rub your face in it and make you feel like you have no hope to ever win again. They want to be on that mountaintop forever.
Yeah, but it sounds, but personally, I think Kobe felt miserable. I think there's signs.
I disagree. I think Kobe was
not settled when he was an athlete. I think he was always felt like I got to do more.
Wait, but well, EJ, no. Continue your point. How does this impact Scottie?
Well, to me, Scottie's position at the top isn't one that I think he really cares about. I think it's something that he realized, oh, I'm really good at this. Like, Kobe relished and Michael relished in, like, really kind of like dashing the hopes and beliefs and the dreams and the life fulfillment of other people. Like these guys were killers.
Tiger did as well.
Tiger, absolutely. I was going to say Tiger was the same way.
And all those guys, everyone you just named, has major personal problems.
Right, but I don't think that the sport, I don't think they ever looked at their sport and said this sport is part of the issue. Like, that's clearly what Scotty is saying. He's saying that, like, I'm doing this and I'm realizing, like, what's the point? There, you would never hear a quote like that from Kobe Bryant. Point is to be the best and to crush my opponent by all means necessary. That's what he would say the point is. Same thing with Michael, same thing with Tiger. Scotty does not have that. Doesn't make him any less a great athlete. It's just, to me, there are guys who have brains that are wired differently. And it was very interesting to hear a guy be so great and not have that killer instinct.
I think I actually disagree. I think that Scottie's like, I have to win to stave off the horror. And that's what Kobe and Michael Jordan were saying. No. They're all like you just described, they were all sort of miserable. Like, winning never satisfied Michael or Kobe. So, I know that as a fact. Like, it wasn't enough.
Sorry. So when I was getting this, what I was picking up here from Scotty was a little less of what you're saying, Pearl, of like, I need to win to stave off that awful feeling of the losing is unbearable. And it was a little more like, we're all just on this spinning rock hurtling through space. Like, what the hell's the point anyway? Right. And, you know, I got a little more of like a despair about just like a little more life despair, not just professional.
Did you hear the five-minute clip?
No.
Okay. So that's the sound bites. I agree. That's how it sounds. But he did go into talking about how important being a husband and a father was, and that's ultimately, like, if golf ever took away from his home life, his private life, he'd stop playing golf immediately.
Right, so that's not like Jordan and Kobe.
Right, I was going to say, he talks about how, like, one of the things he loves about golf is that it allows him to provide for his kid and his family. Yep. I mean, Kobe Bryant loved his family, and Michael loved their families, but, I mean, come on. Like,
you're welcome.
Those guys were, like, I mean, we know what their family lives were like, and it was very complicated and ugly in some ways.
Oh, my God. Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, he gets up there and sees his kids in the front row and says, I would hate to be you.
Right, exactly.
That is not a nice thing to do to your kids.
There's like a clear line between, like, when you talk about the all-time greats with, like, mindsets, there's, like, the Tiger, Kobe, Michael line, which comes with its issues, and then there's a Scotty side that also, it seems like, comes with his issues, because it seems like he's dealing with something that he's not finding the fulfillment in golf that you would think someone as great as he is does, but I think they're different.
I don't at all. I think they're exactly the same. I think they win the championship and they're like, this, finally I did it. And then there's just an emptiness after that.
I think Kobe Bryant went through the same
process, all of them. I'm sure Kobe, 3 hours after the title, they probably looked around and said, whoa, this is it. I'll bet you he did. I mean, I think
Kevin Durant said that he did feel like that after he finally won in Golden State. Like, but again, he joined a 73 win team.
I think it's psychological and chemical too. I think you get such a massive rush. What did he say? A massive rush of happiness and dopamine and everything. And then when your body just drains it all out and you realize, oh crap, here I'm still me, even with this ring. And I think all of them are wired like that.
You get to always look back, and he will always say, I won the Byron Nelson, right? That's what he's talking about, the tournament in Dallas.
Yeah.
So even if you have a crash, you can look back and say, I have this memory forever. Look, I've got the green jackets. Like, it's not all meaningless. Just because it's over doesn't mean it holds no place in your or value in your life. And that's kind of what I'm getting from him.
Golf is also a little unique, not to cut you off, I'm sorry. Just, it's different from, you know, the four major sports where there's a regular season, then there's a playoffs, and everyone's playing for that one championship per year, right? So with golf, you win a tournament, guess what? There's one next week. And there's four majors in the year. They're kind of, you know, placed throughout. So it's not like, hey, I won the Byron Nelson, or I won the Masters, now I'm off for 5 or 6 months and we'll start again next year.
That's true. The schedule is a little bit different.
But these guys win, and they literally maybe are getting on their private jet to go to the next site to prep and play practice rounds at the course to prepare for their opening round that following Thursday.
That's what I wonder, too, if the fact that he plays a sport that hands out a trophy every single Sunday, does that take away from the feeling of I did it.
I can never imagine Kobe Bryant after winning a title saying, but what does it really mean?
Oh, God. I could never imagine that. I can guarantee he looked out in the void of space and be like, whoa, that I did all this and this is all I get. Mm. I think Kobe was very dissatisfied.
It was being inspired to then, I want to achieve this feeling again, so I've got to start over fresh for next season.
I mean, Michael Jordan, after he retired, did a documentary where he's sitting drinking scotch. Like, did that look like a man who was like fully together, like fulfilled? No, he had to come out with a documentary to counter LeBron. I'll take it a step further. Like, Jeff Bezos and those guys, I don't think they're happy. I think they have the same problem. Like, you invent a company, you make all this money, and then you're like, well, that's it? I just don't think, like, the deep soul fulfillment he's talking about, I think in all professions, it's not what you think it is.
Is this why these guys keep trying to go to space?
Yeah.
Final frontier?
Yeah, yeah. There's just no...
Nothing left to topple?
I bet you an actor wins the Oscar, and he's like, I finally did it. And then 6 hours later, he's like, whoa, there's not what I thought it was.
But are you a different animal and the same beast?
I mean, we hired Manny, and Manny's like, my dreams are fulfilled. And then the next day, he's like, what am I doing here?
Top of the mountain. CeeLo has updates for us. By the way, you can call 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork, and on the free Odyssey app. Go ahead,
I'll pay pay-per-view money right now.
All right, first ever MLB All-Star Game swing off last night in Atlanta after the teams were tied at 6 through 9 innings. All that star power on display on these rosters, yet the swing off for the American League came down to Jonathan Aranda.
Aranda slices a fly ball to left center field, headed towards the wall, but short. And the National League wins it in the first swing-off.
It's Joe Davis on Fox, and I thought something was evident about the swing-off, unless it was just him and Smoltz trying to, like, you know, stir up some drama or whatever. Like,
back.
They struggled to follow the flight of the balls
The
swing-off with no fielders out there. Like, even there, he's like, it's going, heading towards the wall. That ball was like a pop-up in, like, medium left center field.
Yeah. 100 feet away.
So, yeah.
We talked about that yesterday, CeeLo. We all do that at a game. It's like a pop-up to center field. Like, it looks like a home run off the bat.
Goodbye! With these great play-by-play guys, which he is, when the games happen, normal game, they, you know, seem to follow it well, but it definitely seemed to be a struggle there in the swing-off.
But you're always reading the outfielder, though.
Right.
That's the trick.
It's a little different. Yeah.
So, dude, he's looking at the monitor. It's a totally different camera angle than he's looking at. Like, that became a home run derby kind of look behind the pitcher within the bullpen pitcher, I guess, the batting practice pitcher. Normally, it's a much more wider view from the pitcher. So when you see the launch of the ball, it's a little easier to tell if it's someone that's like those. It's so close up. I think for Joe Davis, he's like, I think that's going. Maybe. I don't know. It's weird.
You know what the worst is? When a guy, it's a huge, like, Pujols, it's a long bomb, and the left fielder doesn't even turn around.
Yeah.
That's the most insulting thing. I would never do that to my pitcher. I'd at least pretend that I'm
the
running
back.
The
courtesy step.
Like,
courtesy look.
Why do they do that to the pitcher? That's the meanest thing you can do to your teammate.
Not all home runs are created equal, you know? American League comes up short after Kyle Schwarber went 3-for-3, homering on each of his swings to put the NL ahead for good. He captured MVP honors, tried to keep it simple and not overswing.
Oh, man. Just trying to not hit a home run, I guess. Just trying to stay short, because if I would have tried to hit a home run, I would have probably hit my guys over there. But just happy that it worked out for us and the National League's going home with a win.
Much, much earlier in the game, you had Clayton Kershaw's appearance as he pitched the top of the second for the NL. Got a couple of outs before he was lifted to receive the big ovation from the Truist Park crowd as Rob Manfred's legend selection. And initially wasn't loving that idea or distinction, but eventually came around to it.
You know, once I kind of understood that I wasn't taking anybody's spot and that it was just like, you know, whatever they call it, legend pick, whatever. It just was It was a little uncomfortable, but now that I'm done with it, it was awesome.
Clearly enjoyed himself. You could even hear it. They didn't legend picker, whatever. Like, he couldn't even say the words clearly out loud, because I think similar to what we talked about last hour.
Yeah,
a little uncomfortable.
You don't want to be called a legend, especially when he hasn't said he's retiring.
Yeah,
it almost feels like baseball's trying to push him out, but I don't know why they would do that. Did you guys hear he was mic'd up?
Oh yeah,
in the dugout.
Oh yeah.
I can't say what he said, but Fox just let that roll, and he must have said it 6 times, and it was bleep it, dumper. No? We no one else saw this?
I didn't hear that. Wait, what's under? I actually don't know what's under the bleep.
I just don't want Manny to have me saying that for the rest of time he can drop
you
the drop.
I found it earlier today.
Is it something that, is it a curse word?
Like D-Generation X, you know?
It's not a curse word, no.
But it's not something Maggie wants to say.
Well, she doesn't want her voice. So maybe if you just play
kind of like
the audio of
during
Kershaw
the Michael Penix run at Washington, we had a lot of issues with Maggie. Yeah.
I don't want it in the system.
It's a very like 90s like insult.
Yeah.
Okay, but you can play it.
Okay. I mean, no context.
Two words for you.
I got it. You go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, dude. Sick. Suck it. Suck it, big dumper. Suck it, big dumper. Yeah.
Great work. work, mate.
Yeah, he had just struck out Cal Raleigh. Yeah. That's the context, but I didn't want to say that. So
I can see where you wouldn't want
I don't want to say that.
That clip didn't save, no. But he did say it, and Fox let it roll, so there you go. By the way, in terms of the swing-off participants, interesting, there seemed to be some conflict or conflicting opinions on that. So, Stowers, I think, mentioned he had no idea he was going to be in it, whereas yeah. Pete Alonso said it was predetermined by the managers before the game.
Oh, I read the managers had to put a list in and there was an injury.
Maybe they didn't inform some of the guys. I don't know why you wouldn't, but
there was an injury. A guy got hit in the hand and they had to pull him and replace him.
Oh, so Stowers was the replacement for Suarez?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. So I was like, that doesn't quite line up. This was something you guys mentioned as well last hour. So ESPN's Jesse Rogers confirmed on X. He said, quote, for people wondering, many players have already left, including a lot of starters, left as in on a plane home.
Yeah.
So guys that got out, they met the media, like sort of like spring training style with the game still going on, and then whoosh, cleared out of there.
So first pitch was what, like 8:20 or something like that. And by the time the swing off was happening, was it 11:45? I think it ended until midnight.
It ended at midnight, yeah.
The only thing I will say, as good as it was, I did not need an interview with every person right as I came off the plate. It's like, all right, it was Tom Verducci. It's like, I love you, Verducci, but let the guy go up there and just swing. Mm. It's late. Come on. Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to talk or answer.
Yeah. they didn't want to talk to him. No. Too. And like, he was trying to get answers from them. They're like, I don't know, I'm just going to go up there and swing. It's like, no, but how do you feel about this?
Yeah, it's like, this is the first ever. How do you feel? It's like, nervous. I feel real nervous right now.
Jonathan Aranda was like, just go up there and just swing the bat and have fun. And it's like, all right, have fun.
Meanwhile, you got Smoltz up there, and I get it. They're trying to, pump everyone up.
He's Smoltz was having fun.
He goes, this is the pressure. It's just, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. I can't believe what I'm watching. Back. It's like, dude, they're taking batting practice. It's like, you can't understand how hard it is in front of all those fans to go up there. I'm like, it's a BP fastball. It's no different than the home run derby.
I will say this, though. This somehow ever makes it to the regular season. That you better find a bullpen or batting practice pitcher who knows what he's doing. Because then that becomes now a part of strategy in the game. Like, you can't have a guy who doesn't know how to throw the ball right over the plate.
Yeah, but I feel like these older base coaches, they know what they're doing. Like, they're pretty good at that.
They throw it over, but there's a lot of tail on those pitches. They're not exactly straight.
I didn't love how Travis Chapman pitched. That's the first base coach of the Yankees. Yeah. He was pitching for the American League guys. Didn't love his pitching.
Yeah, I agree.
You have a designated guy. Your designated BP guy.
You want a straight ball that's just above the knees, right? I noticed that in the home run derby when the guys could keep it down and in the strike zone. Sure. That's like the
everybody
sweet spot.
Everybody has their own sweet spot.
The funny part about the home run derby is when guys go down a run and it's like an older gentleman who's throwing BP and all of a sudden like their arms starts to give out. I think that was Josh Hamilton.
He needs the timeout, not the batter.
Okay, we got to leave it there. CeeLo, thank you so much. Chris Lopresti's in today for Andrew Bogish. Coming up, we have more from the SEC Media Days and why the coaches seem to be getting in line and falling in line on one particular playoff model. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Quickly, Pearl, the SEC Media Days. So we brought you some Arch Manning and Steve Sarkisian sound earlier in the show. When we get back to Arch, we're asking you today, if things go sideways for Texas, if they fail to live up to the expectations of at minimum making the college football playoff, at best winning the title, who's going to wear it more, Sark or Arch Manning? I'll get back to that in a second, but quickly, so the future of the college football playoff and how this sport is going to determine a champion after this season is totally up in the air.
Yeah.
Okay, so whether they expand from 12 teams to 16 is still not a given, although we think it's going to happen because of the money. And just who gets in and how do you form a bracket is all still up in the air. And the SEC and the Big Ten are going to have a big say in how this gets determined. So Kirby Smart was asked about this, of course, the Georgia head coach. And he said that the coaches are generally in favor of 5 conference champions and then 11 at-large bids because there could be years where the SEC deserves to have 4 teams in, and there's years where the SEC could deserve to have 7 teams in, right? They don't want to limit themselves in terms of automatic qualifiers. But one other thing that he did say, which kind of rubbed people the wrong way outside of the SEC, is that he was saying that if you're a mid-tier SEC program, you've got to keep as many at-large bids available to keep fan bases engaged and to keep coaches from having to answer tough questions about why they're not playoff teams. So EJ, I know this rubbed you the wrong way, and I think some other people too. Like, listen, if you're not good enough to just make the college football playoff, then you're just not good enough that season. It's not the rest of college football's, you know, it's not their job to keep mid-tier SEC fan bases engaged in the sport. Do you understand
that? Absolutely. But EJ, what exactly is your problem though here that you're saying that's life in the SEC? Just get used to it, toughen up.
I don't want self-preservation should in no way be a criteria as to why we're talking about doing 5 plus 11, because that's what that is. You're saying, well, we got to keep these mid-tier. We got to make sure that, you know, South Carolina has something to play for. You do an SEC championship. Just like everyone else in your conference, just like everyone else that's playing all throughout college football. This idea that all the other conferences are fighting for their lives, but then, well, if you're a mid-tier SEC team, well, you don't actually have to compete for a national title. Just be mid, and you'll have an opportunity to make the college football playoff. Right. That in no way should be the criteria. Now, if you want to say that they're the best teams, that's one thing. To say, well, we need to keep mid-level SEC fan bases engaged is ridiculous.
Yeah,
Completely ridiculous.
I think that it all goes back to the idea that the SEC is positing that year after year, their schedules are the hardest. Period.
Yes.
End of story. But they kind of make it seem like there's not as much fluctuation year to year as there may be in the future. Well, when everybody has money, and in theory, everyone has a similar amount of money, I guess, to spread around, and that parity becomes more of a thing in college football. I'll agree with you that the SEC has the advantages now, and they have had the advantages for 150 years of college football. But considering how rapidly the sport's changing, considering how much the talent it could be getting spread out in the future, should the SEC still be able to, does this seem like a smart argument?
So the whole anti-SEC argument is about this magical world where BYU is winning the national title? Is that's what we're talking about? Some fantasy world where mid-majors, and I'm going to call them mid-majors, are competing? Listen, the SEC stole Texas and Oklahoma from the Big 12. Like, the Big 12 is basically a amped up Mountain West right now. So of course, like, I feel like we've been talking about this all week. Like, the Big 10 got USC and Oregon from the Pac-12. Like, they are the elite conferences. There's something messed up about the fact that, for example, SMU and Clemson, like, the teams they had to beat were not as good as the teams in the SEC. So I think the imbalanced scheduling, I don't care if you run through the Big 12. I mean, Colorado almost won the Big 12.
Right.
You think they were as good as South Carolina and these other teams? I don't think so.
Okay, but I like the fact that no one knows who's going to win the Big 12 and that it could be one of like 8 or 9 teams in that conference. That's something about college football that I think is interesting, unique, and I like, and I don't want to change. I'm not going to compare it to the SEC. I'm not stupid. I understand that it's better talent in the SEC than the Big 12. But I like the element of keeping the uniqueness of college football, which is the Big 12 is a wild ride, and that's really fun. I'm not saying they need more teams in than the SEC. I'm just saying it's still fun and contributes to college football in a positive way. You seem sometimes like you want to take the Big 12 and the ACC out behind the woodshed and an old Yeller style, whatever, like, well, put them out of their misery. And that's not how those conferences
but
are.
But then, like, you're talking about tradition. Like, what a tradition in the Big 12? Like, I mean, like,
no, not tradition. Yeah,
I'm just,
it's
like,
unexpected.
These are like, this is a hodgepodge of a conference. I mean, this is not, Texas isn't there. Oklahoma isn't there anymore. Like, this is not the traditional Big 12, which used to be, what, the Big 8 and the Southwest Conference. Yeah. Like, there's no tradition in these conferences.
I never said tradition. I said you don't know who's going to win. It's an unexpected part that makes it come down to the last day of the season, which is kind of fun.
So why don't we care about the Sun Belt or the Mountain West? Like,
they're not a Power 5 conference, Power 4, pardon me.
But wait a minute, though. What's the tradition behind South Carolina and Ole Miss? Those teams are the one jack. Like, this idea that, oh, I got to move aside all of the Big 12 and all of the ACC so that South Carolina and Ole Miss can feel good about themselves. Those teams haven't, or programs haven't earned anything. Those programs are known to be chokers and losers. Like, what? Like, again, like, you just put SEC brand by someone's name and all of a sudden it elevates them to a status they haven't earned.
Because the SEC, they care about, they also care about basketball now, but they care about football. They have traditions of football. The ACC's not like that.
Oh, yeah, Ole Miss, great tradition of football.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Coming up, hey, we're back to the great debate.